to The Divine Breadcrumb with your hosts, Carol Campos and Deb Sorensen. Carol and Deb have always believed the universe helps people on their path by sending signs, clues, or what they call divine breadcrumbs. A divine breadcrumb can create both small and massive shifts in a person's life. On this podcast, Carol and Deb will speak with authors, healers, entrepreneurs, and other amazing people across the globe to discuss these pivotal moments. So get ready to learn, to love, and to laugh. And remember, the universe always provides if you allow it to. Enjoy the show.
Hi, this is Carol, co-host of The Divine Breadcrumb. I am so excited to talk to you about my new 10-week one-on-one coaching program, Energy, Esteem, and Empowerment. I designed this program for people who feel powerless, who feel like their self-worth has been damaged and continually attract toxic situations and people into their lives, but can't figure out why. And worse, they feel like they can't be who they really are. This is something I've been called to do for a long time based on my own experiences with trauma and abuse and my long journey to heal. In this program, we'll be focusing on uncovering your personal power, cultivating self-esteem and self-love, and doing deep energy work. It's time to remove the mask and let your true voice be heard. To learn more, go to carollcampos.com, click on the services tab, and then private coaching. Again, that's carollcampos.com, click on the services tab, and then private coaching. You can do this, and I'll be right there with you. Hello, everyone. This is Carol.
This is Deb. Welcome back to the Divine Breadcrumb.
So if you've been listening for a while, then you know that we often talk about the fact that everything is connected. Well, today's guest wrote a thought-provoking and heartwarming parable on this subject. Today we are talking with Daniel Bruce Levin, author of The Mosaic. Daniel has led an extraordinary life. Early on, he had the chance to work at a billion-dollar company, but turned it down to hitchhike around the world. He just knew that happiness and peace would not be found by following the standard route. Later, Daniel has stated that when he was one day away from becoming an ordained rabbi in Jerusalem, he left to come back to the United States. He opened a bookstore in San Francisco, and then after that, spent 10 years in a monastery. And if that wasn't interesting enough, he then became the director of business development at Hay House, where he grew the business exponentially. And on a personal note, about a decade ago, Hay House and the authors associated with Hay House had a huge impact on my life that continues today. So that's just one more reason why it's so cool to have Daniel here. And Daniel is somewhat of a modern mystic and has a unique ability to see things from many perspectives. And today we'll be talking with him about power of listening, why nothing is as it seems, and of course his book, The Mosaic. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Wow, what a beautiful introduction. Thank you so much. And I've been looking forward to seeing you and talking with you and picking up some of the divine breadcrumbs you leave along the way.
Yay, love it.
Yes, absolutely.
So Daniel, you've experienced so much in your life. So before we get into the book, why do you think you were led down a less conventional path?
Oh boy. I think as I look back sometimes on my life and my melancholy moments, I wish that I could have just been like everybody else. I wish that I could have grown up and lived four blocks from where my parents lived and kept the relationships I had growing up. But that wasn't the life I was given. Sometime at the age of 13, my dad, who was my hero, was taken from me. He died of a heart attack. At the age of 15, 2 years later, on the same day, my mom died of heartbreak. But my dad wasn't there. And so it immediately, as a kid, I was a naive kid that didn't know any. I was so protected and sheltered and loved. And, you know, we grew up in a, I talk to so many people and I hear the way they grew up and I have tremendous compassion for the way they've grown up, but I grew up in a beautiful home. where my dad worked hard and couldn't really make a good living, but my mom, their love for each other was so strong, it didn't really matter. And we grew up in that love. And then when they were gone, I just said, why? Why would a 15-year-old kid who knows nothing about anything suddenly be out on his own? And it made me, as much as my friends and my friends' parents tried to commiserate with me, as much as my aunt and uncle tried to be there for me, no one could understand the pain that I was going through because they hadn't lost their parents. They hadn't lost their parents as a kid. And even if they had lost people close to them, these people were my heroes. They were my everything. They were my protection and my... And so it made me sort of question the world that I lived in. And I said, why in the world would my hero be taken from me for seemingly no reason at all? And because of that, everything that I looked at in life, and I only really realized it in writing The Mosaic years later. I mean, I wrote The Mosaic 4 years ago, 3 years ago. And in writing The Mosaic, I realized that what I did is I went to the adults who were the wisest people I knew as a kid. And I said, where'd my parents go? Like, what happened? Where are they? And they told me they were in this place called heaven. So I set out in search of the place called heaven. And I realize now, looking back, that all these opportunities that most people would die to be in, even considered for, I was given, but it wasn't the heaven I was looking for. And so it made me walk away from those things because I saw that for this lifetime, for this point in my life, what they offered wasn't what I was seeking. And I think so often we take things because they're great opportunities, but we don't really question, is this really what I'm looking for?
I love that statement. And to take that even a step further, I think a lot of us do things that we don't particularly maybe enjoy, but we do them because we're good at them.
Yes, yes. Or we've been told, you know, this is the way to do it. This is the way. Like, who turns down the opportunity to run a multi-billion dollar business?
Right. You do, that's who.
Yes.
And I've wanted to have my head examined many, many times for doing that. Like, that it's just crazy. There's no rational reason to do such a thing. But when I sat with it and I tried my best, like I took a year to make that decision as a 15-year-old kid. And I watched the life that my uncle was living. And they were living a good life. By all standards, they were living a great life. They were living the life most people wanted. But when I looked underneath it, I didn't see the love and the happiness and the joy and the feeling that I wanted from life. And so I said, I could have all the money in the world and not happiness. And it was really interesting because 40 years later, my best friend from that period of time, who really like excommunicated me when I decided not to take that offer, he said, I'm so mad at you because I was thinking of all the things we could do together. And now you're walking away from it to find happiness and inner peace. What are you, crazy? You know? And I said, yeah, I think I am probably, but you know, and I understand if you're mad at me, do whatever you have to do. But about 10 years ago, I saw him, we were in New York. I was in New York at the Mandarin Oriental staying there. And I was coming up. Their lobby is on the 34th floor. So you take an elevator from the ground floor to the 34th floor. And I was taking the elevator up to get the elevator to my room. It was about 10:30 at night. And as I was walking out of the elevator, my best friend, who I hadn't seen in 40 years from that time, was walking into the elevator. And remember, he had excommunicated me. So as he's passing by, I went, hold it, Neil? And he looked at me, he said, who said my name? I said, I did. He said, who? How did you know my name? I said, wow, you don't even remember me. This is Danny. I was your best friend when we were 15 years old. Do you remember? He went, oh my God, Danny, what are you doing here? And I think because I was in the Mandarin Oriental, now I was okay, right? And he said, look, put your things down. We're going out to a club. Why don't you come with us? I said, I don't think I'm going to go to a club tonight. But I said, let's have breakfast tomorrow morning. And he said, the hell with the club. You guys go. He said, I've got a nice bottle of scotch and two cigars. Will you smoke cigars and have scotch with me? I said, of course I would. So let's sit in the lobby and do that. And from 10:30 until about 4:30 in the morning, we spoke together. And we caught up on 40 years. But one of the things he said to me was, Danny, I made a big mistake. And I said, tell me, what happened? He said, well, I was so mad at you for going off to find what you were looking for. And now I have all the money in the world. I'm on my fourth wife. My kids don't talk to me. I cheat on my wife all the time. And I look in your eyes and I see you have the one thing that I've always wanted, but I can't have, which is that sense of peace. And I said, Neil, it's okay. Like, I'm here now. Like, it doesn't, who cares what 40 years passed? Now for whatever reason, we're here with each other. Like, I'll come to you. I'll work with you. I'll help you to have whatever it is you want. You're my friend. And he said, I'm going to call you as soon as I get back. Well, 10 years passed and I still haven't heard from him. So either he hasn't gotten back or he's somewhere or he forgot about it.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting that living an inspired life and being at peace and happy is often, it doesn't seem logical from the outside, sometimes even to ourselves.
Yes.
And I think sometimes it scares people a little bit.
Yeah, so the question, Carol, is why? Like, why does it scare people to have, to know ourselves? And that, I mean, in these chaotic times that are happening right now, everything that I understood, even for all these years, has been sort of jolted. Like, the foundations that I'm standing on now aren't as secure as they used to be. And I'm putting my foot down on what I think is a solid foundation. And I'm finding that I'm standing on like ocean waves rather than solid ground, you know, and the very foundations that I believe in are being questioned. And I had a friend ask me, I said, it's so exciting on one hand and so petrifying on the other, right? But it is exciting. I mean, it's like so amazing to see like a new dimension opening up. And a friend of mine said, well, what are you scared of? And I said, I really don't know, because there's nothing logically that I'm scared of. And yet there's this fear that lives inside of us. Mm-hmm. It certainly lives inside of me, that for no reason, like, what am I scared of? I'm not scared that I'm going to lose my relationship with myself. I'm not scared that I'm going to lose my relationship with my creator. I'm not scared that I'm scared that I could lose my perception of reality, and people might think I'm crazy, but people have thought I'm crazy. When a 15-year-old walks away from a $1 billion business, people think you're crazy. So this isn't like the news break that you see on the channel. Danny's right. Crazy. He's been crazy all this time.
It's interesting because this concept was an ongoing struggle between my mother and I. My mother was very, you know, you go to college, you get a job, you work there forever so that you get your 2 weeks vacation. But as long as you get that paycheck every 2 weeks, then you're good.
Yeah.
And you do whatever it is that they ask you to do for that paycheck that you get. Yeah. And I, from being even at teenage level, I'm just like, I can't do that. I can't live that way.
Yeah.
And it is interesting that some people just get very, I don't even know what that is. It's not even just a structure. I guess it's a lifestyle. It just never feels right.
Yeah, but it's called normal.
Exactly. Right? Right.
And I think there's this desire in us all to sort of fit in. Like, I have the show 50 Conversations with 50 Strangers. And one of the things that I'm doing is I'm walking into this room with people that I don't know, that 10 minutes ago I had no idea even existed. And I just wanted to see what would happen. How in the world that we live in, where everybody's strangers to us, what would happen if we sat down with a stranger and had a conversation? And one of the questions I ask people is, do you feel like you fit in, or do you feel like you've always not fit into the world? And I was 100% sure walking in that the answer to that question would be, yes, we fit in. You know, we love to fit in because everybody wants to be normal. Everybody wants to. But 95%+ of the people that answer that question, and I've had hundreds of calls, I've said, no, I've never felt like I fit in.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
And so it made me think, like, wow, what a genius Steve Jobs was when he came out with his, you know, his saying, we're for the misfits and for those people who never fit in, who don't, you know. And I thought initially, what a stupid campaign that is. Who's going to relate to that?
Yeah, in a lot of ways, I think all of Apple's marketing is sort of based on that idea.
Yeah, and it works.
Yes, but then, of course, by buying into it, you're fitting in.
Yes.
But
yes,
anyway.
Well, you're fitting in.
Separate
one,
issue.
So one woman answered, of course I fit into the world. And I raised my eyebrow because everything she had said up until that moment made me assume that she would answer, no, I don't fit in. And I said, tell me about that. She said, of course I fit in because nobody fits in the world. And I fit into the world that nobody fits into.
Perfect. So for people that aren't familiar with the Mosaic, would you tell our listeners a little bit about the story and why you felt called to write it?
I was turning 60, and I thought, for anybody who's interested, which maybe there aren't anybody, and maybe nobody's interested, but I thought I was interested at least in leaving some sort of legacy behind me. And I ended up writing a book called V2, which was the second version of your life, because I had talked to so many people who said to me, if I knew then what I knew now, I would live my life differently. And I thought, okay, but you do know now what you know now. What are you doing to live your life differently now? And most of those people were retiring and playing golf or just, you know, waiting to die or what, doing whatever. Very few of them have recreated the second version of their life. So I wrote the 9 steps to living the second version of your life. And I sent it off to a friend of mine who was an editor who was also became my muse. And she said, Danny, this book is great, but this isn't your book. And I said, I'm sorry, what are you talking about? She said, this isn't your book. I said, well, I think it is. I wrote it. She said, no. I said, do you think I plagiarized it? She said, no. The ideas are fresh and good and exciting and new. But you're not a self-help guy. Everything about you is you tell stories. You're a storyteller. Why are you writing a self-help book? I said, well, I've been at Hay House all these years and I know what a self-help book is. and she said, well, but Danny, that's great that you know what a self-help book is, but that isn't your book. And I said, so what do you want me to do? She said, I want you to tell a story. I said, so you want this man guy, Danny, to write a fable? Is that what you're telling me? I mean, come on, really? And I fought her for about a minute and a half until I realized the power of story. Mm-hmm. When we tell stories, we don't tell people what to do. We just tell a story of something that happened. And in that story, people either relate to it or don't relate to it. If they relate to it, they tell themselves another story through your story. And that story just continues to grow and continues to become personalized. And so I sat down and I said, why don't I write a fabulized version of the story of my life? And that's what the Mosaic is. It's about a boy who loses his parents 2 years apart on the same day. And when he asks the adults where his parents are, they tell him they're in a place called heaven. So he decides as a little boy to set out in search of the place called heaven. And the people he meets along the way are not the people that you would imagine. They're not the ones leaving breadcrumbs throughout the world. They are common, ordinary people, people that most people walk by and don't even look at or talk to or listen to. And he thinks, why am I sitting with these people? These are not the people that are going to show me heaven. But then he realizes I'm here with them. Why don't I take a few minutes and just listen to what it is they have to say? And in every single case, when he sat with them and listened to them tell their stories, he realized his perspective completely changed on who they were. They were no longer the homeless man. They were the person that had this story that brought them to this place where in this moment they were homeless. They were no longer just a guy who fixes potholes in a road. They were the father of a family who woke up every morning and had such love and admiration for his kids, and his kids wanted to grow up and be just like him. And he started to see the humanity behind the people that were only book covers. And we all know, don't judge a book by its cover, but we all do. Mm-hmm. Our first instincts and impressions. And when he realized that everybody he met, he saw differently now than he had before, he wondered, what in life do I see correctly? Do I see anything correctly? Or is everything I see just my own interpretation of what I'm looking at? What would happen if I would get myself out of the way? What would the world actually look like if I could see what I could see without me seeing it? And in that moment, he met the mirror maker. And the mirror maker was the only shop open on a long street where Mo had been away from people for a long, long time. And he was so excited to see this village that he came upon. And he was so excited to meet people in this bustling village. But by the time he got there, everything was closed and no one was there. But there was one store open, and the door was open. So he decided to walk into the store. But in the store, there was nobody there. All there was a room full of mirrors. And so what was really odd for him is that he didn't even know if what he was seeing was what he was actually seeing, or a reflection of a reflection of a reflection of something that he was seeing. And so he decided, I have to get closer to everything. And he walked around and he looked at all the different mirrors. And he saw one that was just translucently beautiful. And as he was standing there, the mirror maker came up behind him and said, "Oh, I see you found something you liked. And she said, "What do you like about this mirror?" And he said, "This is the most beautiful mirror I've ever seen. First of all, it's not made of glass, it's made of bronze. And it's polished so beautifully, and this light that shines on it shows a reflection of me that I've never seen of myself before." She says, "Oh, really? What do you see?" And he started to tell her all his stories. He started to tell her who he saw in the mirror. And she said, "I'm sorry. I must have asked the question incorrectly. I don't really want to know what you see when you look in the mirror. I want to know what the mirror sees when it looks at you. The mirror doesn't know any of your stories. What does the mirror see when it looks at you without all your stories? Who are you without those stories?" And Mo said, "I don't know." She said, "That's okay, sit with it. Sit here and see if you can find yourself without your stories." Well, I would like to invite your listeners to meet the mirror maker right now. I would like to invite them to do the mirror work, not of looking in the mirror and saying, "I love you, I love you, I love you." That's beautiful work to do too. But look in the mirror and try and see what the mirror sees in you without all the stories you tell yourself about yourself. Who would you see?
So powerful.
Yeah, there's so many interesting characters in the book, and that particular segment with the mirror maker was very impactful to me, because I definitely, as many do, have held on to lots of stories that I've learned to let go of. But one of the other characters, and I think it was the traveler, talks to Mo about feeling disconnection. I'm paraphrasing. It was something like, you know, when you fall out of sync with the steps, you become disconnected. And when you feel disconnected, you suffer. And this one really hit me between the eyes. And I think it will resonate with a lot of people, because it's so common for so many of us to have that feeling of disconnection. But how do you go about getting connected again when you're feeling so out of sorts?
So a beautiful question, and thank you so much for asking it. It's the beauty of this book to me is that I didn't write it, because it's so simple and I'm so complex. And the characters in this are just so simple. And the traveler says it so beautifully. If I were to ask you and your listeners, what three things make up everything in life, and nothing can happen without these three things, what would you say?
Oh gosh, I'd have to think about it.
I'm going to say energy, love, and thought.
Beautiful. So if you could make it simpler, what would you say?
Love.
Okay. So listen to how simple the message of the traveler is. Everything in life must have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Nothing exists without that. What do you think about that?
That I would have to think about for a while.
Okay.
I'm good with beginning and middle, but why an end? I guess I see that.
So if we were doing work together or playing together, I would ask you, how does something start without something ending?
That's true.
Right?
Yep.
And one of the things that I find that people have the most difficulty with is letting go of the things that end so that something new can actually come into their
being. Very true. Mm-hmm.
Right? And so, and she does this through just the simple process of walking next to Mo as he's walking. He's walking and he notices every step he takes, she's right beside him. And so he thinks, I'm going to mess with her a little bit. So I'm going to just stop suddenly. And she stops suddenly. And then he starts walking a little bit. And then he starts to run and she's running right next to him. And he says, how is it that you can come with me every step of the way? And she says, because everything, Mo, has a beginning, middle, and end. And when you take your steps along the way, when you realize that each part, you have a beginning to your step, you have a middle to your step, and you have an end to your step. Well, in my life, what I've always been really good at is finding the places where things can start that nobody sees and seeing where it's going to go and seeing the end. But the place that I really sucked in my life is because I saw the end so clearly. I thought, why do we have to waste all this time in the middle? Let's just get to the end. Why is it taking so long to get this done?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? But she taught me through the book, through her being with me, that the middle's where all of life happens. It's where all the happiness and all the suffering and all the joy and all the smelling of flowers, all the experiences that we were brought here in this life to experience, that's where they all are.
Yeah. I've heard it referred to as the messy middle, or some people just call it the dash on your tombstone.
Yeah, the dash. That's what, and so I was talking to someone on another planet, they talked about the dash. But that dash, that space between the beginning and the end is where everything in life happens. And I was missing the experience of that experience. And when I told you some of the foundations in my life were falling apart, it's that place in particular that it's falling apart for me. Because suddenly I'm realizing that if really nothing is as it seems, then what is it that I'm seeing that is as it seems? And what is the space look like between the things that I think I'm doing? And I've always talked about the space as the most important part of a thing, but I don't give the space its credit. I go from beginning to end. But when you miss that space of the middle, life doesn't work out so well. It seems like it does. It seems like you're moving quicker. But you can't go from the beginning to the end without going through the middle, even if the middle is a very small place.
Yeah. And Deb and I were just talking about this recently. People get very caught up on what is my purpose and feeling like there's this destination, this end game that they have to get to. And I was one of them. I was, for a decade, I'm searching and reading every book and taking every class I could, to find that thing. And I was missing what was going on in the present.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think, and there's value to what you were doing, your search as well. And there's value to also experiencing the experience of the experience in the present.
Exactly.
But what I tend to do. I don't know if anybody else is like me or if I'm just, I'm certifiably a weirdo already from the first, from 15, right? But what happens, I think, for me, is that I think they live in exclusion of each other rather than in mosaic with each other.
Right.
And the beauty of mosaic of our life is that everything is working in cooperation and to create this artistry of our life that is here. And there is nothing excluded. They all operate, all the pieces come in simultaneously. So we can be searching for our purpose and looking for what we're here to do. And at the same time, we can be enjoying the process of going through the pain and suffering and the joy and the humiliation and the lift up and the lift down of all the things that we go through to have to get to that place, which may be right in front of us.
Beautiful, right?
Yep, I love that. So in the mosaic, Mo is told a few times that nothing is as it seems.
Ouch.
What does this mean to you?
You would have to go there, wouldn't you? So as a 65-year-old man, who spent most of his life trying to understand what is, putting all of my energy into investing in that part of me that will continue with me through the end of this life. I sort of got to the place where I felt like I had a good sense of what I was doing here in this world until about 3 weeks ago. I started a book club with the Mosaic, and we got to that statement. And somehow, like, this is so strange, because when I wrote the book, I thought it was going to take me a very short period of time to write it, because it was the story of my life. And I had written a book for a hotel based on their core values. I wrote a story for them around the story of their hotel. And it took me 6 weeks to do it. So I thought, this is going to take nothing. I can do this in a month. 2.5 years later, I'm sitting pulling out every white hair that's appeared in my head from the black head of hair. And I'm wondering, what in the heck is going on? What happened? And finally, I called the players of my book, these made-up characters. I called them in front of me like we would on a Zoom call. And they weren't the real people that they were based on, or they were made-up characters. These are characters that I made up. I have a right to make up my own characters and write about them, don't I?
Absolutely.
And they came to me one by one, and I said, why aren't you letting me finish this book? Why would I write something that I think is really good, and then in the morning it's not saved when I know I saved it? Why would you corrupt my files? Why would you destroy it? Why would you have my computer crash and everything be saved except my book? Like, what are you doing? Why is it that I'm not hearing? And one by one, they said to me, Danny, what you're writing for us to say, we just don't want to say that. And I said, I beg your pardon, your characters that I made up. I think I have a right to say what I want you to say. They said, continue to do that, and you'll be another 5 years doing the process. I said, well, what is it you want me to say? They said, just listen to us. You've created us now. We have a life to ourselves now. Listen to what it is we want to say. If you listen to us and say what we want to say, your book will be done in 30 days. I said, deal. I'm just going to listen. Just tell me what you want to say. I'm so sick and tired of trying to save this thing. And 30 days later, it was done. So what I realized in that process is, if things that I make up have the power of voice, that they become real enough that they actually have a living, breathing purpose here, then doesn't the environment that I live in have a purpose? Doesn't it have something to say to me? Doesn't my workplace have something to say to me if I would listen to it? Doesn't the dynamic of my family have something to say to me if I would listen to it? Doesn't my own body have something to say to me if I would listen to it? Doesn't every situation that I encounter, every person that I see on the street, if I would take the time to just sit there and be with them and just listen to them, wouldn't they have something to say to me? And so when nothing is as it appears, what I've seen now in these days is everything that I believed, everything that I thought was real, was just story built upon story, built upon story, repeated and repeated, 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 so many times that I started to believe the stories were real. Mm-hmm. But the stories aren't real. They're stories. And in this search for my truth, those stories started to become unraveled. And now those stories that I believed were real facts became the foundation on which I built villages and towns and cities and countries in my own world. And now all of that was crumbling.
It's so interesting, because when I hear that phrase, nothing is as it seems, to me that's, I don't know, it's exciting. It, to me, it means endless possibility.
Yeah, I think it's exciting until I'm living in it, and then I'm not less excited. But that's only part true, because I had a woman on my podcast the other day, and she spoke of this place in us that we don't want to look at, which is really that place of the darkness that exists within us. And we all touch that darkness, and we all come out of that darkness. We all touch it and we say, oh yeah, I've experienced that. And she says, really? Okay, great. But what she did is she spent 7 years just sitting in it. And I said, but hold it. How do you guarantee yourself? How do you prepare yourself that that darkness isn't going to overwhelm you and overtake you? And she said, I don't think you understand. I want the darkness to overtake me. I want it to overcome me. I want it to throw me into its throes. And I said, why? Why would you want that? And she said, because I had this instinct, and the instinct proved true. That at the center of all that darkness was this little golden cube. And that golden cube was my actual light. And I had lived my life with this imaginary light that had shined so bright that people would see what a beautiful light you are. But that imaginary light in the face of this golden cube of light that was my real light, that light was able to show me my darkness and show me my light, now just vanished and disappeared because there was no light in an imaginary light. And when I touched that place where the real light existed, there suddenly became no darkness.
Wow.
And I said, I want to work with you.
Yeah.
And she said, I said, do you do that work with people? She said, are you kidding? Nobody wants to do it. Who wants to sit in that pain and suffering? Mm-hmm. She said, I cried tears that I didn't even know existed. I made sounds that I didn't even know were possible. I destroyed things and fought things in myself that I didn't know that I would be able to come back from. But I had a guide who did it with me. And so she said, nobody wants to do that. I said, well, don't, you can't say nobody anymore, because I think I do, and I'm starting to talk to people who may want to too.
Mm-hmm.
And because there's something so scary, but when for me, like when you hear the truth of nothing is as it seems and you decide to walk headlong into it, there's something exquisitely beautiful about a statement of truth that as scary as it is, as hard as it is, as much as you know that it will challenge me, like for me, as much as I know that that would challenge me beyond anything that I even could conceive possibly being challenged through, there's a wholesomeness in it. That just, it resonates as true.
Yes, absolutely. Oh man, this is such a great subject, and we could probably go on about that for quite a while. I'm trying to be cognizant of the time. There's so much I want to talk to you about. So I did want to get to this though. I know listening has been a huge part of the work you do. Would you talk to us a little bit about the power of listening?
Yes. Can I tell you a story to do that?
Please.
Okay. So when I finished the Mosaic wanted me to go out and do what Mo had done. And I had set up a trip and I was about to do it. And 10 days before my trip, we had COVID come and I couldn't do it. But one of the people that I met before COVID came was Corey. Corey was a homeless man. And I've had the opportunity in my life to be with the richest people in the world, to be with some of the most spiritual people in the world, to be with people that motivate and change people's lives. And I've had the opportunity to sit in their dining room tables and play with their kids on the floor and meet their parents, not just as, you know, people that sat in an audience and listened to them give a talk. They've been kind enough to give me counsel and kind enough to ask counsel from me. And they've impacted my life in a big way. But I don't know that anybody has impacted my life as much as Corey did. that day that I sat with him on a street corner in San Diego. I sat with him, and when I first came up, he said, no, this is my corner. You can't come here. And I said, I'm sorry. I just want to sit here and be with you. I mean no harm. He said, but if you're here, I'm not going to make any money. And I need to make $5. I make $5 every half an hour, and I need to make $10 an hour. And I need to do that because I'm trying to take care of some people who are homeless and don't have anything, and they have less than me. And I said, okay, let's get that out of the way. And I put my hand in my wallet, and I found $50, and I gave him $50. I said, I'm going to be with you probably half an hour, maybe a little more, but here's $50 to cover your an hour's worth of your time. He said, you're strange. I said, okay, what's new? Don't, you can tell me something new. And I sat with him, and it took a little while for him to let me in. And my question to him was, he sits here all day. What is it he would like to say to all the people that are passing by if they would take the time to listen? And what he told me over the course of that time, it took about 30 minutes for him to warm up. And then finally he opened up and he said, Danny, you're telling me a lot of stories. I'd like to tell you a story. I said, that'd be fabulous, Corey. Tell me that story. And he said, I hate being homeless. I'm ashamed of myself. I'm embarrassed. I can't believe that at this part of my age, I can't even put the money together to find a place and a shelter inside to live in, that I can't feed myself, that I can't take care of myself. I hate myself right now. And I was about, oh, it's okay. But he didn't give me the chance. He said, but what's even worse is that people, when they pass me by, they treat me less than an animal. They treat me as if I'm a thing, not like I'm a person. And so people will walk by, they'll spit on me, or they'll yell at me, or they'll steal my money, or they'll punch me. I had a group of kids come by and beat the heck out of me. I had another time I was laying here just sleeping, and a man came up and urinated on me. He said, but it didn't get that bad until someone threw a bag of human defecation at me.
Oh my God.
And it opened up, and all of that was all over me. And I don't have a change of clothes, and I don't have a place to wash up, and I don't have anything. And I thought, if I hate my life this much, and I'm such a pain in the ass to other people. He said, I decided that day I was going to go around the corner on the street behind this, Danny. Nobody goes. It's a dark street and nobody uses it because they all use this street. It's a busy street. And I decided when it became dark, I was going to go around the corner and I was going to take my life that night. And 2 minutes after I had that thought, a man came up to me and he put his hand on my shoulder and he said, how are you doing, brother? And he said, this is not a good time, sir. Keep walking. It's not a good time. Just don't, this would not be the time to be with me. And the man said, this is a perfect time to be with you. And he sat down next to him. And he said, tell me what's going on. And Corey said something about him made him open up to him in less than 30 minutes that it took him to open up to me. And he said, this man put his arm around them. He was wearing a 3-piece suit. Corey was in shattered clothes, sitting on a broken cardboard box. And he said, tell me what's going on. And Corey said he started crying, tears, crocodile-sized tears. And the man just pat him on the shoulder and just said, it's okay, tell me everything. And then he looked at me and he said, Danny, it only took about 10 minutes. But after 10 minutes, I spoke to him of my troubles and I spoke to him of my pains. And he didn't try and fix me or help me or change me or tell me where I should go to be saved. He just sat there and held me and listened to me. And after he did that and he walked away, I realized I couldn't take my life that night. Because suddenly this important man in a 3-piece suit had spent 10 minutes with a person that was about to kill himself, that was the least important person in the world, and made me feel important. Because he just gave me his time and his energy. He said, I would like to tell these people walking by to take 10 minutes out of the course of their life. Find someone you don't know and just walk up to them and ask them how they're doing. And just sit with them. 10 minutes out of the course of a lifetime is not a lot to ask. And he then said to me, I wish I would have found that man. I wish that man would have come back because I wish I would have been able to tell him that he saved my life that day. But I've never seen him again. Well, I've gone back to Corey, to that street corner many, many times, but Corey hasn't been there. I've looked for him on other street corners, but he hasn't been there either. I don't know what's happened to him or where he's gone or if he's even still alive. But I wanted to tell Corey that that story has not died with him telling me the story. I've told it on every podcast that I've been in, every lecture that I've given, in every boardroom that I've put in a presentation to, in every company that I've spoken to, in every place that I've been. I've tried to tell Corey's story. And I've tried to share the message of take 10 minutes out of the course of your life and find somebody that you can just see how they're doing and just listen to them. Because we have no idea what the simple act of listening can do for a person. In that case, it changed Corey's life. It saved his life. But so many people just don't feel listened to and heard, don't feel valued and accepted. Mm-hmm. And if we could just take 10 minutes, nothing, 10 minutes is nothing, out of the course of our life and just do that for another human being, what might they feel? So because of Corey, I'm starting a revolution of listening where I've told millions of people now about his story. And there are probably hundreds of thousands of people that have taken 10 minutes out of the course of their life and done that. And I have to believe that if more and more and more and more of us would take 10 minutes out of the course of our life and listen to another human being, the world we'd live in would be a happier, better place than it is right now.
Absolutely.
100%. That is such a beautiful note to end on. I don't think we could top that.
I agree. That was beautiful.
Thank you. Thank Corey.
Yes, and thank Corey as well. Yes. Danny, where can people find you online?
So I have, my website is danielbrucelevin.com or themosaiconline.com. I think I've sent you that information.
Yes. Well,
we can put it in the show notes.
Absolutely.
Folks, it's time for us to make time for each other. And so I have all the time in the world to make time for you. If you're listening and you just want to be heard, please contact me. If you're listening and you just want somebody to run an idea by, please contact me. This I do is for no charge. This isn't a matter of a service that I charge you to do. This is a service that I offer. And if that service, if people want to then do more work, then that service becomes the work that I do. But that's not the intention of it. The intention is what would happen if I'm telling people to, what would happen if they took 10 minutes out of the course of their life to listen to somebody, I have to be available to do that too. And I want to live what I'm speaking, not just speak what I'm say I should be living.
Thank you again so much. It was such a pleasure to have you on the show. And I knew that day when we met you that this was going to be a fabulous episode. So thank you for joining us.
It's my honor. Thank you for having me. What a pleasure.
Thank you. Everybody, thanks so much for listening. This was such a treat. We hope you enjoyed it. As always, you can catch the show on our website, thedivinebreadcrumb.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and most recently, Amazon Music. If you like what you're hearing, just drop us a quick note on our website, or if you can think of something that would make a great show, or if you think you'd make a great guest, just drop us a note and let us know. We'd love to hear from you. Once again, Danny, thank you. And we will put all your contact information in our show notes. And everybody, thanks for joining us. And we will see you next time.
Ciao.
Hi, everyone. If you love the Divine Breadcrumb podcast and the stories we're sharing, please consider supporting the show by making a donation on our Buy Me a Coffee page. You can set up monthly donations or make a one-time donation in any amount you choose. Just go to thedivinebreadcrumb.com and click on the Support TDB tab, or you can go to buymeacoffee.com/TDB. Again, that's buymeacoffee.com/TDB. We're forever grateful for your support.